Welcome to Breaking Free From Within, the podcast where we dive deep into personal development, self-healing, and the journey to living a fully aligned life. I'm your host, Prairie Francia, certified health coach, Reiki master teacher, and substance use disorder counselor. My mission is to help you break free from self-sabotaging behaviors and step into the healthiest, most empowered version of yourself. Welcome back to Breaking Free From Within. I'm your host, Prairie Francia, and today's episode is a very special one. We're sharing the closing roundtable from the Sobriety Summit 2025, which was an incredible gathering of voices, stories, and perspectives on what true recovery looks like. The summit was a beautiful success, bringing together experts and lived experiences to offer hope, healing, and new ways of thinking about sobriety, personal growth, and emotional freedom. If you missed the live event, good news, you can still catch all of the powerful talks. Replay access is available for the next 30 days for just $20. You'll find the link to purchase access in the show notes and on our pages at Sobriety Summit on Facebook and Instagram. Enjoy this heartfelt roundtable conversation with David Burke and myself, reflecting on the powerful messages and next steps on the path of recovery. Let's dive in. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our closing ceremony roundtable for the Sobriety Summit 2025. First, I want to take a moment to sincerely thank each and every one of our expert speakers. Your conversations, your vulnerability, and your wisdom have been absolutely incredible. Throughout the summit, you have offered not only knowledge, but deep heart, and it has made a real impact. We've heard powerful truths about how early childhood experiences shape our belief systems, how inner child healing and forgiveness work can change the course of our lives, and how recovery is not just about abstinence, but also about reclaiming our wholeness, our light, and our sense of purpose. This summit was created with one goal in mind: to offer people hope and a tangible support system to those who need it the most. And you, each of you, have fulfilled that mission. Part of our commitment as people in recovery is to extend a hand to others. And this summit has truly been an act of service, compassion, and healing. I also want to give a special thanks to Ken Seeley and Eric McLaughlin from Intervention 911 for their generous contribution to the raffle, a full scholarship to their substance abuse counselor certification program. What an incredible gift for someone ready to step into this important work. Also, thanks as well to the Empowered Recovery Course for sponsoring the Sobriety Summit and contributing a scholarship to the raffle for their transformational self-paced recovery program. And of course, an enormous thank you to every single person who registered, showed up, and participated in the summit. Your willingness to learn, grow, and heal is what makes all of this possible. If you haven't done so already, remember, you can still upgrade to VIP access. VIPs will have full access to all of the summit replays. VIP can also be entered into the raffles for the scholarship prizes. And you have up to 30 days after the summit to upgrade and participate. And after 30 days, we will officially announce the raffle winners. So before we move into closing out this beautiful summit, I want to take a few more moments together to really soak in the wisdom and the energy that has been shared. As part of this closing ceremony, we're going to host a roundtable of reflections with David Burke from Sierra Health and Wellness, one of our expert speakers. And I've prepared a few intentional questions that invite us to reflect on the deeper layers of recovery, what it truly means to heal, to grow, and to offer hope to others. The intention behind these questions is to create space for heartfelt personal insights, because lived experience, when shared authentically, has the power to transform lives. I'll ask each question one at a time, and then give David and myself also, as I was part of the summit, a chance to respond and share whatever is coming up for us. There's no pressure. This is simply an opportunity to close out our summit with honesty, connection, and hope for the road ahead. So thank you for being here. Let's dive in. So, David, This is the first question. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for being a part of the summit. Your presentation was fantastic. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, Prairie, and thank you for putting this all together and get such a great group of people together. That's pretty impressive. Just listening to the last couple of days, I got to know some people better and got to know some people for the first time. So a lot of wisdom went down.
Definitely, I agree. Good. So let's get into the first question. When you look back on the beginning of your own recovery journey, what is one thing you wish someone would have told you?
Well, I would say 26 years ago, I wish somebody told me that it was gonna be a process to where it's recovery isn't a one-time deal. I heard that throughout this summit too, is that you have to do the hard work. There's a lot of work to be done. It's not just a 30-day program, it's a lifelong journey. And I've been on that journey for 26 years now, and I'm still plugging away, by the grace and everything that recovery and treatment does. But we're continually working on ourselves daily, whether they're good problems or bad problems, just navigating through life. So it's a blessing.
Yeah, that's deep. I agree. When I think about, things that I personally wish people, I guess I would have heard or known or understood sooner would be the whole thing about triggers. And I know Christian talked about this a lot too, is that there are so many different triggers for numbing out behavior. And those triggers are just kind of the numb out from doing the actual interpersonal work, because that work can be very scary, and it's just so much easier to numb it out, forget about it, or to, I guess, project onto others that they are the problem and not actually stop and look at ourselves. And for me, in my case, to look at myself and my own relationship to the different self-harm behaviors that I was participating in. And I guess also that it like you're just saying, it's a continuous process. So say you do the work and you recognize the triggers, then the next part is like, oh, it's like riding a bike. You get better and better at it, right? Or any kind of thing that you practice, you have to keep practicing it, and before it becomes second nature. And there's so many different things and scenarios, and some of those scenarios are more difficult and complicated than others. So it can be like it can be really hard sometimes. Sometimes it's easy to be like, oh, my coping mechanisms, my strategies for getting through this tough scenario without a relapse, or the self-harming behavior or the numbing out behavior. Just it's practice. You have to keep going and keep going.
I think the biggest thing for me, if somebody asked me what was it for me in recovery, early recovery, I was very grief stricken, trauma. I had lost my father tragically. There was really no hope. I was in the midst of my addiction. And what Ken Seeley and Eric were talking about, and Ken was one of my mentors way back, and John Southworth, he brought him up. And John, when I was doing interventions, I could reach out to him anytime. But when I was in residential treatment way back in 1999 and all that, we didn't have it wasn't dual diagnosed mental health and or trauma. It was a little bit different, so that you had to go out and seek it. But what Kim was saying, and if anybody wants to take advantage of it and they're coming in the field, is when you go to school and you learn, I got all kinds of degrees now. And when you go to school and everything, you have to work on yourself. I did go see a therapist, and I did go, deal with my trauma, and I worked through that. I had everything I was supposed to do. But when you go to school, you have to work on yourself. You build a network, and it's just like Christian was saying in his talk, it is the opposite of addiction is connection. I had connection because I had nobody. I was in isolation before in my disease. I could be in a room full of people and be the only one in it. That's how depressed and grief-stricken I was. And so I was a good actor. And so at the same time is once you work through all that, your self-esteem and your motivation and everything comes back. And we can get into the pharmacological part of it in the brain and everything, but I just had a driven purpose life from there, and that's pretty much where I'm at today, and I still work on myself daily.
I relate to that definitely. Of listening to Ken and Eric talk about continuing to do your own work, it is so important because we think that we're just because we're maybe not using a substance doesn't mean that we're just completely cured. Like it is a continuous journey. Thank you for sharing
And if
that.
you mixed in every one of those speakers' messages that throughout this whole thing, yeah, you have some really, really quality information there. So, you could almost blend it all together, with all the speakers. So it's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Seems to be a very strong underlying message is to do the inner work to heal the underlying issues that are caught driving the addiction. Okay, so we're going to move on to the second question, and that is, what has been the most surprising gift or transformation that recovery has brought into your life?
I think the biggest gift is love. Feel loved before. I lost that, and I what I you know I when I lost my say my father, or when I lost my addiction, I felt like I lost my love. So when they tell you to change one thing and that's everything when you get into treatment, that's a scary place to be. But when you my childhood might not have been the most. It was a survival at the fittest, but at the same time, that's what molds a person into what you do and how you act. But I was loved up to a point, I felt like as a kid, but it's just it was one of those things when I got into recovery, it was a genuine situation where, hell, I'm not alone anymore, But going back to do the work, and you have to do the right thing for the right reason because it's the right thing to do. And and the first part of it is showing up. Nothing gets done if you don't show up. So that was, big, and then your yeses need to be yes and noes need to be no. And so that built trust in people that loved me. And so that was the biggest thing is having that camaraderie and just building it out, throughout the years. So recovery gave me a life that I didn't expect. I mean, it's, and for anybody that's struggling in early recovery, just stick, do the hard work because, the good things show up right when you need it.
That's wonderful. Thank you. I can relate to that. Also, love. What comes to my mind is authentic connection. There's, I think, this common misnomer that, well, I hear this a lot. Alcohol brings out who I really am, or it's, and it's, or like, it's the spirits come out, it's. But really, like, and it maybe if they call it like the truth serum, or it lets down people's inhibitions. But the real element to all that is that that person that can dance while they're drunk, or that can all of a sudden be, I don't want to say an eloquent speaker, but like say more of what's on their mind, that person is in there without the alcohol. And when we start to do the work in the sobriety, we learn to connect with that person, our person that's there, and find that courage to be seen. And the other thing too is like that the connection with other people is so much more deep. Whereas I thought before, or I would think that to connect with other people, I would need to be drinking with them. I would need to be cutting loose or doing that, but that what I've found is that in sobriety, my conversations are so much more like heartfelt, heart-centered. I feel more grounded, more rooted, and I feel more willing to receive whatever that person is whatever the message that they're conveying, and taking out the filtration of my own internalized oppressive thoughts, I guess, and like actually hearing what they're saying and actually connecting and speaking more of my authentic self. and wanting to connect more deeply and like understand more about the, whoever it is that I'm talking about. So I feel like I have more authentic connection, and that feels really good because I, like I said, I used to use alcohol just to think that that was connection to, woo, we're all having a good time, and that actually filters out a lot of the actual deeper connectability with others.
What's nice about these summits too, if I have to leave everybody with one thing, is that that interpersonal connection, like when TJ Woodward was talking and he shared his story, man, how cool is that? How authentic TJ was about, I've heard TJ, kind of share some stuff, and I love conscious recovery. Our company uses it. It's amazing. Our clients love it. But it's the whole journey. You get to know somebody better when you're doing an intimate conference like this, and you can kind of process and, maybe you can reflect some of your own stuff on it, or just, use it as a coping mechanism if something comes up or something like that, or maybe dig into your material, his material, or get into Ken's school for something. If family's struggling, I mean, anybody could reach out to me at Sierra, and it's the questions you don't ask that keep you stuck. So that's what I would say.
Good. Okay, our next question is, for someone currently struggling, feeling lost or unsure if change is even possible for them, what words of encouragement would you want them to hear today?
I would say the biggest encouragement is pick up the phone and ask for help. That's the first step. I would encourage them just to do it, because there's nobody deserves to suffer in silence. There's so many people out there in this field that are willing to help. You can navigate through, an issue, a solution is, available. People, make bad choices, whether it's suicide or whether it's just staying in their addiction, or maybe doing something and acting out and having to pay something to the penal system. But I would say pick up the phone, ask for help. If you have a football coach or anybody like that that you respect, don't suffer in silence. Pick it up, ask for it. There's so many resources out there for individuals. There's all kinds in the last 10 years, there's so many resources that came out to where somebody will be talking to you on the phone, just like the Father's House. You have a 12-month program. They have scholarships and stuff like that. There's some foundations that we're all connected with throughout the United States. So I was on the phone this morning to somebody from Alabama, and I got them in a program in South Carolina. I live in California. So we're connected. It's not just we're connected, me and Sierra. It's all of us together in this field. There's probably thousands and thousands of them. Like when me and Ken are doing interventions or anywhere like that, we have access at our fingertips to resources. So nobody needs to suffer, or family members doing the dance, like I was talking about, around that individual identified patient. Is sometimes they could be suffering. Maybe they lost their husband and their son's in addiction, and the whole dynamics is tilted over here. So there's an easy way with people like us in the field to come together and do these summits and let people know that, there is a way back.
That's a beautiful thing. So what's coming up for me that I'm thinking about, and it's something that Dana Grant had touched on also, very motivationally in her conversation, her talk was, the consistency. You have to do the work. It can't just be, you say mantras and you think that you're manifesting. You actually have to like tap into that energy of what it is that you want to create in your life, and your desire for change and a better outcome has to be stronger. It has to outweigh the desire to stay stuck. And another big part of that is so many of us, like, I heard the common theme is like these children, all of us as children, somewhere along the way, got the message that we weren't worthy of something better. We were, whether it was from school, the school system, parents, grandparents, just people in powerful positions over us as young children. And So it gets ingrained and it gets reinforced because it's a belief system, and we're always looking for reinforcement of our belief system. So it's doing the work and going through that process of identifying the belief systems that are keeping us stuck. Where did they come from? Whose inner dialogue? It's internalized oppression, basically. It's somebody else's dialogue being spewed and projected onto us, and we internalize it, and then it's a cycle. That's why they call it like intergenerational trauma and trauma. It's just yeah, it's a cycle, and we can break it. And it's a really great thing, especially for our own children or even our grandchildren, to these cycles with the interpersonal work. So it takes getting uncomfortable and doing this work and really facing the hard feelings, the hard feelings of betrayal, and even addressing our own shame and our recognizing our own roles, because we're perpetuating a cycle. It was done to me. That's what I learned to do. That's how I learned to be. And now I've done it to my children or the people who are closest to me. Those are the people who are easiest to hurt.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's so those people, my advice to them is to align with the energy and keep moving forward with with the work. So if we have one last question. So the last question is, we know that community is critical in recovery. So we know that community is critical in recovery. How have relationships, whether with mentors, peers, or loved ones, shaped the support, have shaped or supported your healing process?
Oh my gosh, I wouldn't even be here today if it wasn't for all my mentors and people in the community. I remember before I got into recovery or anything I was coming into it, and I always had this dream of, being connected in the community and doing stuff. I always had my own businesses and stuff like that. But until I got in recovery and started, doing service work. And service work for me, is giving back. And so once I started giving back, I started getting really cool mentors. I mean, people I was like, wow, I want some of that. And that's how I got into the criminal justice system. Judge Stevens, was one of my people I looked up to and stuff like that, as pretty much as a father figure, really. But and then there was other people in the community when I joined, like I was on the board for Salvation Army for the state of California. A bunch of the I was chair one of being the chairman of the Homeless Coalition for the North State. But it wasn't until I got in service that I really started to excel, because I got outside of myself and started giving back to the community, building out women and children's centers and be more involved. And what I was doing is really selfishly doing it for the community, but also for myself as a healing tool to get into that love I talked about before. And so some of my mentors, geared me towards school, CCAP, I put in KDAC, I put a big shout out to them. They grew me because, going through all the courses, I went back to college, I started doing, and just put me in front of the right people. That's all I can say. So if you're, wanting to excel in life, you can't, you won't if you don't give it back. You'll excel to one point, and you can't be like Ken Seeley was saying, it can't be driven by a financial gain. You need to be in service for the right reason. And if you just follow your heart and follow that love that people give to you, and maybe don't run faster than your guardian angel while you're doing it, just slow down. That was the biggest thing for me, is slow down and just feel and embrace the process. So, yes. And I still have great mentors today, and they fluctuate, but the biggest one is my faith.
Yeah, faith is powerful. So the only thing that's gotten me through, I would say, or the main thing that's gotten me through from a very young age, a lot of hardships. So I was thinking while you were talking too, like what the mentorship is Huge. That has been one of my biggest saving grace, faith and the mentors and people, some people saying the right thing at the right time and it just landing right on my heart. My life could have been so different. There's so many different paths that I know could have been my reality, and it's scary because there's a lot of, I would say my cohorts, children who were also children of addicts, who were my parents' friends, and they ended up, things ended up being a lot more rough, and that could have been me, I think about, and to me, for it is me in an ex to an extent, but it could have been so much worse. But I had the grace of a few people just like showing me love and be like, hey, let me help lift you up in this moment. And I guess the other part of it was like, I don't know if it's, you call it heeding the warning or but actually listening to the advice that they gave. Even if it wasn't right in the moment, it resonated. And I, eventually did take the advice, and sometimes I didn't want to hear what had to be said to me because it was in conflict with what I was thinking was cool at the time. But then looking back, I have so much gratitude for people saying the uncomfortable things of like, hey, you can do better. Hey, step up. Hey, what are you doing? What's going on with you? How are you? Just those simple things of like, oh my gosh, somebody cares about me. Somebody gives a darn. And that's very powerful. And there have been a few people who I have really aligned to. I'm like, wow, talk about some magic. Like you said, I want some of what they have going on. And it's always been the case. I haven't had one mentor that has had a perfect life. And now all of a sudden they're giving advice to everybody in house that their life, this is how to never have a problem. No, it's like I had the problems. I was down in the trenches. This is how I survived. This is how I dug my way out. And I'm still a humble human being and I can share connection with you. And it's such a beautiful thing. I kept hearing quite a few times throughout this marketing this summit, oh, it should only be addicts who are teaching addicts how to not be addicts. And it's like, wow, there's a big, strong stereotype there, I guess you'd say, and all of us have live experience, and it's there's always more than what meets the eye. And so it takes a little bit more patience, a little bit more diving in to really get to the heart of like, what is the message that's being conveyed here? And not just look at the surface level and our quick judgments about things and just doing a little bit more work there. And thank God for the mentors and
Overall, it was a great summit. I mean, you should be very proud of yourself to put this together and great speakers. And, everybody's going to walk away with something new to their toolbox.
yeah, well, I have a lot of great gratitude to you, David, because you have been one of my mentors in the past few years, and you helped connect me with, I think, pretty much every speaker in this group. You've introduced me, and I've been able to create relationships with each of them, and they've all impacted my life. And now I'm really grateful that this summit came together, and thank you, and thanks to everybody who just said yes to showing up for this. And I'm really excited for the next one. I know it's going to be even bigger and even better.
Well, that's how we save lives. We connect, and it's a lot of strength in numbers. So
Yeah.
until the next time, that's great.
Yeah, good. Thank you. So I'm just going to wrap this up. So as we bring the Sobriety Summit 2025 to close, I want to remind each and every one of you that your voice matters. The stories, the wisdom, and the healing that you've seen shared here this weekend are a testament to the power of lived experience, compassion, and courage. And we believe that the ripple effect is only just beginning. If you feel called to share your journey, your insights, or your message, we warmly invite you to apply to be a speaker at the Sobriety Summit 2026. Your story could be the one someone else needs to hear to find their way home to themselves. The link to apply is on the summit homepage, or you can just email me personally at alignmentprairieyana@gmail.com. And before you go, make sure that you follow us on social media, the Sobriety Summit on Instagram and Facebook. connect with each of our speakers, follow them on their perspective, social media, and their LinkedIns, join their newsletters. Be sure to grab all of the free resources and gifts that our speakers generously provided. David provided a blueprint on his speaker page for helping a loved one get into recovery and doing an intervention. Also, upgrade to VIP if you want to get access to the replays. It's not too late. And you'll also gain a chance to win one of the incredible raffle prizes. Thank you for being part of this powerful, heart-centered community. Keep healing, keep growing, and never forget you are not alone. David Burke, thank you so much.
All right, take care.
Take
Thank
care.
you.